Hi there, this is Angela Middleton and welcome to my podcast, I Want to BA, where I interview high flyers from all industries to find out their journey, how they came to do what they do, what it's like to do their job, and then their advice for listeners wanting to follow in their footsteps. In this series, we cover everything from traditional careers such as accountancy through to the less traditional careers and future industries such as digital marketing and digital publishing. Today, I'm delighted to have in the studio with us Tom Miller. Tom is super successful in the world of cybersecurity. He set up his own business in this area and successfully sold it a while back. And you would think, wouldn't you, that cybersecurity is highly tech and needs someone who's sort of maybe, you know, particularly strong in technology and numbers and all things like that. But again, you know, as with always, the story is somewhat different from our perception. With Tom, he will explain how he was the son of a fisherman, how he then did lots of selling and sort of landed in technology almost by accident, but saw the potential, used his sales skills and ended up building this incredibly successful business. And he's going to go on as well to talk to us about the future jobs market, the sorts of jobs that you'll find in cybersecurity and how to basically get your foot on the ladder in this exciting new industry sector. Tom, thank you so much for joining us today. And if we could start off by finding out your journey from school, which I know was quite some way away, up to where you are now. Give us a sort of synopsis of that.
Just very quickly, So I was from a very tiny town in New Zealand called Akara, and it was a fishing village, first French settlement in New Zealand, and about 750 people. My dad was a fisherman, my mother was housewife. Three other sisters, and grew up in Akara Primary School, and I wanted to follow a sporting, see how good I could, how far I could take my sport. So I went to Christchurch Boys High School, which is in fact holds the record for producing the most All Blacks. And so I went in there and did rugby and cricket, and I left there in the I think it was 1990.
And before we talk about sort of what happened after that, just if we dwell on your school for a bit. Firstly, you said your dad was a fisherman. So did you have any desires to sort of go in that direction at all?
I didn't really. I mean, I think I was pretty much done on the basis that I spent most of my school holidays every year out on this boat for 4 or 5 days at a time. So I kind of got a bit over the fishing, unfortunately. Yeah. But it's certainly I'm very interested in it now because obviously it's a lovely thing to do. Yeah.
And how was school for you? What was it like?
It was pretty. I mean, I found school tough. I mean, I realised at the age of 35 that I was actually pretty badly dyslexic. I didn't know then, but you know, probably I was four kids in family. I was a pretty demanding child, I think, and I didn't probably take a lot of notice of my schoolwork and all the things that I was supposed to do. I probably fought against doing. So, well, that's certainly what I'm told anyway.
So you naughty?
I'm not naturally academic. And I think through the dyslexia and what have you that made it more difficult, but probably gave me exactly the excuses I needed to really be a bit slack.
So, but you were super keen on sport,
very much so.
Okay. Yeah. And did you do the equivalent of A-levels? Did you do sixth form or anything like that?
Yeah, they're what called school certificate over there, and I did that. I think I got three school certs, and then ended up repeating the sixth form. I concentrated a lot on my rugby and not a lot else, and then left school without really any qualifications. Wasn't able to get a scholarship or any of that sort of stuff. So that left me with probably not that many choices to do from there, but I sort of managed to find my way.
So if we talk about jobs now, had you had any work experience when
None.
You left school?
Okay, apart from fishing.
Okay, so tell us about your first job and how you got it. And what
So my first job, I ended up in a sort of a hotel suite, if you like, and with a bunch of other young people. And I was sort of told that there was a job that was going to make us loads of money and give me a chance to go to Auckland, which is the biggest city in New Zealand. And I thought, well, that's good. The Commonwealth Games are on at the moment, and I'm going to go and take this and get away from my family. And that would be a good thing for me to do. So it ended up being, once I got to Auckland, it actually ended up being in a hotel. You got to stay in a hotel, which was, I guess, was quite cool. But it ended up selling encyclopedias door to door. So obviously selling encyclopedias was the thing. You know, obviously there was a big push on people trying to get their kids better educated with. So we had a bit of a pitch that worked for a lot. And it was the Collier's Encyclopedia.
Right.
that we
beautiful
sold.
Beautiful books, weren't they?
Beautiful books.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Worth every penny.
So you started selling these encyclopedias, and you said it was door to door.
Yeah, but the thing is, the process there is you have to be a door knocker to begin with, appointment maker, and I think that was pretty hard. I mean, obviously, but funnily enough, I actually quite enjoyed it. I mean, there's a lot of, I think, people in New Zealand are generally a bit more friendly.
And so you were quite successful at that,
yep,
I think.
Very successful. So I ended up being the top, I think I was the top salesperson in the world at one point on their platform. And obviously the job cycles there are pretty short because obviously it's people that, you know, you get a lot of travelling people that are on holiday and whatever in New Zealand, and they want to travel around New Zealand, and they use that as a way to earn a bit of money. So the people that come in and out of selling encyclopedias sort of are fairly short-lived. But, you know, I ended up having a team of seven people. Six people. Yeah, it's almost like a pyramid thing, really. You start with the door appointments, you go and you sell the books, and then you end up, if you're good enough, you end up running the team, because often there's opportunities because people come and go.
And you were saying there were a couple of factors for you that made you very successful in that role.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I kind of like the system, you know. There was they gave you a template to say this, do this, don't do that, and I think that kind of worked for me, having a system that I could repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat, and that kind of, I naturally sort of warmed to that, I think.
And there was a script. You were saying there was a scripted.
Yeah, there was a scripted. I mean, it went from everything to what you do, you know, objection handling and all those things at the door.
Yeah.
And I wish I had probably had kept some of the stuff, and then obviously when you went on to sell the books, it would be pretty much you would flick through the pages and you would know of the 30 pages you would flick through in this big book, you would know exactly what to say in each of the pages.
Amazing, by
systematic.
I've seen that happen, you know, sort of work in so many aspects of people's lives. In so many careers, that you know, if they have a system and they follow it, unbelievably the results do come, and that's because it's a tried and tested system.
Exactly.
And I often find when, you know, young people sort of start first jobs and they don't like it, or they don't succeed as quickly as they wanted to, and it's because they are not following a system. And sometimes it might seem that that's not the thing to do, but it is really when you first start, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think, you know, you don't know when you're young. I thought I knew everything and didn't know everything. But I think that the system worked for me. And I find now when I look at the salespeople that we have, and some, or just any of the people actually, that, you know, you put things in place for a reason. And often, you know, many people fight against that system. And they're often the ones that aren't as successful as the ones that follow the system.
Yeah. And also another thing is that, you know, I find a lot of people are, they, you know, they're very anti-sales and they're very scared of sales, or they say, oh, there's no way that I want to do sales. And yet, from your perspective, you know, it was a great start for your career.
Yeah, I mean, I go back and sort of say, you know, the world moves around because people sell things.
Yeah.
People buy and sell things. So the foundation stone, the core of everything, is around people trading and selling and buying and selling.
Yes.
And that is it. You know, so I think I'm proud about my sales heritage, and I don't call myself a CEO or a businessman or any of that. So then people ask me, I say I'm a sales guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm very good at it. And, and I think that there's nothing to be not proud of that. And
absolutely,
I think the people that can get over that are probably the ones that will fear a lot better than those that sort of think that there's some stigma attached to selling something.
If we could move on to what happened after that, then you were there for quite a while, and then you moved on, didn't you?
In terms of the encyclopedia part, I mean, it was probably all up. It seemed like a longer time, but it was probably only a year. It was probably only a year, maybe.
Yeah.
It's very short cycles in that sort of game. And I left and went to Australia, worked in a bar there, then came to England. The sort of rest of it, I went for my first interview and took the first job, basically.
And so really tell us about that.
So the company was a computer maintenance company. Obviously, I had no qualifications about selling computer maintenance contracts or computers in any type.
And you were looking literally for a sales job at this
point.
Just
a job, And in fact, as I said, I took the very first job. It paid me £9,000. And again, the best thing for me is that I got a brand new white Astra 1.6.
Yeah.
And I thought that was the best thing that I'd do whatever he wanted me to do.
Well, I think, you know, that is sometimes things like that are you know, if that's the main catalyst, then that's brilliant.
So I spent quite a good few years trying to navigate my way around London, driving in London, having come from a small place in New Zealand was quite difficult. But so I worked there, and that was obviously before there was any type of internet or anything. You know, computers broke and you went and bought a part and you replaced the part. You know, they were, you know, much the same as a car. You know, the, you know, now things don't work like that. You know, people just throw things out or it gets fixed from diagnostics remotely, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So you were in the computer industry right at the very, very beginning, albeit that you were, you know, were selling the services. And then how did you sort of evolve that into starting your own business?
Yeah, so I started with this organisation and became their top sales guy and was just good at the selling. And obviously selling is a big part of its relationships. I'm good at the relationship part. I think I come across as fairly honest and I kind of get people on side and was particularly good at building those relationships based on trust.
Yeah. And that probably came from your sporting background as well, do you think?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, without without knowing any of the sort of traits of being good at certain things. I mean, I went to, as I say, the high performance sports school, and part of the things that were sort of bred into you that without even saying it was always team over talent, you know. And you know, I use that time and time again with that within our business. It's it's all about the team and less about the individuals. And so that was sort of baked into my core DNA without even knowing that that existed. And so I think that that held me in pretty good stead for building, you know, what became a fairly successful company and bringing people along on a journey.
So you were, you know, top salesperson for this IT company now.
Yep.
It was pre-internet.
Yep.
And then you started your own business. And,
So, I mean, I started ITC in 1995.
Which is very interesting. What's that stand for, ITC?
It's Tom's Company.
Amazing.
So I only I started it then, and one of my founding partners joined a year later in Roberto. So I very quickly stopped saying those words. And I think I use those words now because it's we've sold the business and what have you. Moved on, so so it's quite a nice story to go back to, and I think so back in the sort of early or mid 90s there were you know, network computers were becoming networked, data centers were, you know, probably sort of further on, the people were connecting those computers to data centers.
Yeah, because computers, for people listening, you know, that are used to sort of cloud-based technology, computers were standalone boxes, really,
indeed,
that processed data, but they didn't talk to each other to start off with.
No.
And you started your sort of involvement in IT right from that point where, you know, you sort of saw how things were evolving, didn't you?
Yeah, and I think in the bigger picture, things were kind of networked and things, but in the sort of traditional companies, you know, computers were, you know, pretty much isolated, working on site for a particular building, a company, and then slowly but surely those offices were connected over wide area networks, and then eventually what became the internet was used to connect those offices.
And then you evolved your business into where you said cyber, which is what we've entitled this podcast. Now, can we just talk a little bit about what cyber is?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think security is obviously, I think people obviously understand all the way back to what security is and protection, protecting things and what have you. And I think what cyber has become is going back to all you know, people are very familiar with firewalls, and firewalls were to allow and deny traffic that you would trust through a piece of technology. And that was kind of through the early stages of where the sort of the security stuff sort of started. And then more and more people have started to move data on making, you know, data, you know, available on any device, anywhere, anytime. And the proliferation of that data is spread throughout the globe across multiple networks, across mobile data centers and clouds, on your device, my device. It's you know, it is huge. And so what that's allowed is a whole load of issues related to the protection of that data. And I think the sort of cyberspace, which is, people probably think of it as a sort of a globe and dark space with little lights in it and what have you, I don't know. But I think that the cyber community for us, there's technologies that are there to help you protect your organization or your data.
And that's in a nutshell what you're doing, isn't it? You're actually you're putting things in place for companies to have protection
to help
their
them
data.
Protect. And then what we provide on top of that is sort of the ongoing monitoring. So if you can imagine the big screens and, you know, people have seen the sort of Jason Bourne sort of things and the sort of big, you know, the screens that people watch to look at movement of people. And what we're doing is really we're looking at data and bad and potentially bad things that are happening on those corporate networks.
Because what you're saying was that cyber crime, which is the stealing of data, is actually bigger now even than the drugs trade.
Drugs trade, yeah. And there was a report us a few years ago, that it was over $3 trillion, and that was roughly the size of the global illicit drugs trade at the time.
And why do people steal data? What do they do with it?
I think the big plan is that these organisations are building, you know, these criminal gangs are building profiles of individuals and what have you, using the collection of multiple pieces of data. And I think there will be eventually a pretty big problem, in as much as that as soon as people know your identity and all of the things that your attributes and all those things, you know, stealing your stuff is going to become a lot easier. And what everyone's heard of machine learning and all that sort of stuff. And then when you can teach a machine to do these things on mass scale, then you've got real potential problems.
And you actually could have national problems
national
security.
For sure. Yeah.
And if you start to think about the scale of that in terms of, you know, airlines and
banks,
everything not working properly, it's very scary. So it's such a critical and growing requirement, really, isn't it, for large corporates?
Yeah.
And we give our data away willy-nilly now, don't we?
Yeah, you've ticked on your, I accept. And I think if you put yourself, I accept that, so I do accept these things, but I think there's so many people, because I don't have anything to hide, I think that I'm very good at changing my password, all the normal sort of things that you have to do these days. I think there are so many people out there that don't really understand what they're doing or why they're doing it.
Yeah.
It can become quite dangerous. And you know, there's plenty of examples of what's happened in the press.
So as we said, it's a growing area, unfortunately, but fortunately in terms of jobs, because there's so many opportunities there. And they're sort of, I guess, you know, a number of strands if you wanted to go into this sector, this growing sector, ranging from the sort of the technical type jobs to more the business development and policy and things like that, as you were describing. Could you just give us an overview of the types of jobs that people might want to go for in that sector?
I think depending on what people's appetite or their interests are, we look for things, you know, we're looking for problems. So if you're proactively trying to seek out issues, using tools and technology, and then there's obviously monitoring. You know, you're monitoring what's happening, so people get, you know, attached to sort of, you know, interested in that side of things. And so we're in the network and security operations center, you have a level one, level two, level three, level four analysts, and so the entry point is you know, apprentices or whatever that are coming in 24/7. They're looking at tickets, closing tickets, helping the technical team, you know, to perform the duties of doing the best they can to provide a service that is around the delivery and management of often network and security incidents. And as they progress, they can shoot off at a number of tracks. They can go down, if they're interested in engineering, they can join a technical team to go and install things and build things. If they're more interested in sort of consulting on things and talking about business issues and looking at policies, procedures, and all those sorts of things, which you know, if they're more consultative in their mindset, they can go off and do that. There are plenty of jobs in both those areas. I think that both have a sort of a fairly well trodden track for a lot of those things in terms of qualifications and all those types of things. It's fairly well established. And I think that you know, in sales, you can probably enter without having a great deal of qualifications, like I did, and go into you know, either become a technical salesperson where you're interested in the tech and want to sell it to the companies. Or you are interested in understanding what business issues are.
So not only is it a variety of different jobs and it's a growing sector, but as I understand it, it's fairly lucrative as well. People can earn very good money
indeed
in all of those strands, can't they?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it is, you know, our organisation, you know, it's a constant battle about, you know, keeping up with the pay rates, certainly in London. It's a very sort of talk about the top of the triangle, the people at the top of the triangle who've been doing this for a few years now, are very, very well paid.
Yeah.
And there's clearly a lot of people coming at the bottom of the triangle that are sort of moving into this space. And I think that with the right sort of desire to be successful and work hard and all those sort of things, you can push yourself up, because there's a lot of jobs out there. I think that the numbers are something like there's 2 million, there'll be 2 million shortage in cyber security jobs by 2020, I think it is, globally. Yeah.
And also what was interesting is that obviously if you're working in technology like that, I think you said earlier that you don't actually have to be anywhere specific geographically to do this work, so that means that you can either travel or not travel. It's up to you, it gives you a lot of flexibility and hours
more,
as well.
More and more it's about the result. I'm probably from the older school of wanting to see my guys working in an office, and you know, that's just not going to be part of our future. I think there's a lot more work around flexibility, what the younger generation are looking for in terms of, you know, I'm wearing a suit today, but we've got a dress down policy that was announced, and I'm pretty old school in a lot of ways, and you know, but they want to turn up dressed how they want to dress, and doing the job that they love, and we're trying to provide an environment where you have to provide the right environment for people to function in the right ways. Yeah, and we're learning every day about the needs of this new
Method of working. Absolutely. So talking about entry into the sector then, I mean, if we could sort of probably look at three routes, maybe those that have decided they want to leave school or education 16 to 18, those who want to go to university, and then of course we'll get those people that are sort of what I call midlifers, where maybe they've had a couple of careers and they now want to transition. So, you know, in each of those three categories, what would be the routes in?
Without qualification, the easiest route to think about sales, if that's what you want to do, that's a very interesting part. I think for the ones with the qualifications, I think there's many obviously avenues there. I think with the qualifications that involve maybe, as you say, some of the maths, the sciences, that sort of thing. With the banking, the makeup of the next cyber analyst, if you like.
Yeah.
Analysts are just processing lots of information, and what we do in cyber is just process lots of information, looking for things that are abnormal and that sort of thing. So the mindset of that type of person. So rather than going to a bank, thinking about going into cyber, the demand for this sort of work is going to be off the scale, as I say.
Yeah. You were saying that there's a number of agencies as well and schemes that have been set up to get young people, women into cyber, aren't there? Can you tell us a bit about those?
Yeah, so the government have set up NCSC, which is National Cybercrime Centre, which is part of GCHQ. And that's the kind of public facing part of the intelligence services that do a great job in protecting, you know, what we do every
and
day.
And they actually advertise their own apprenticeships as
they
well,
do.
I noticed.
They do,
so
yeah.
You can join them age 18.
That's right.
And do an apprenticeship with them.
Yep. They've also got a thing that we, ITC, are part of, which is Cyber First, which is looking at attracting kids that are far younger than that. I think it's from 11 to 14-year-olds is the category they're looking for. So at that age, they're running sort of competitions. They do all sorts of things where you can get some exposure to what's like learning about cyber, thinking about what you might want to do in the future. Clearly the government and the agencies want to keep pace with this massive threat that's out there and keep pace with their adversaries and what have you. So bringing on young people into this is going to obviously give them a track into potentially working for NCSC, GCHQ or any of the other agencies.
Yeah.
Which is greatly important, and equally that training and embedding sort of cyber at that level gives those kids a great opportunity to come and work for companies like ITC or any of the other companies
out
there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you were saying that there's a women in cyber.
Yep, they
group
have.
As well.
NCC run. There's a real big campaign around getting more and more women into cyber, which is something we're really are big and behind.
Fantastic. You also had a great example of somebody who was midlife who transitioned from an all. Different job into it. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so one of our security guard in a building that we're in, he grabbed me one day and said, Tom, I'd like to come and work for ITC. And I said, really, what do you want to do here? And he said, well, I think I'm quite technical. I like computers and that sort of thing. And I said, well, go off and get, you know, my advice to you is go off and get your CCNA, which is I think it's Cisco Certified Network Administrator, I think it stands for, and come back and talk to us, and I'll get you an interview with our NOC manager at the time, Network Operations Center manager. And so he left, you know, he was there one day and wasn't there the next. And then he came back about probably 7 or 8 months after that and had his qualification and said, can I have the interview? And so I think roll forward, I think it's probably 4 or 5 years ago now. He's actually, in, you know, he's probably a level three analyst in our SOC.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, in his example, obviously he's left and gone and done this qualification, but there's a number of qualifications that can be done. Some can be done evenings, yes, and things like that. There's that organisation, isn't there?
The SANS
organisation. Is that
SANS, yeah.
There's a whole load of
training courses there. You know, there's the sort of more common ones are CISSP is the most sort of, I guess, the most common qualification.
And what's that one?
The CISSP. That would be probably the qualification that allows sort of your grassroots understanding of information, what they call information security.
Yeah.
So that's looking at a lot of the processes and the standards around security.
Well, I think that we've covered enough to inspire people to actually want to get into this sector. And you've given us a lot of information as well as the sorts of jobs that people can do and how they can get into them. So I imagine that not only are people going to be really interested in wanting to follow this up, but you may well have some people wanting to ask you questions as well.
Good.
If they do, where would be the best place for them to come to?
I think if they can send me a message on LinkedIn. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn, my profile's up there, and I'm a pretty frequent user of LinkedIn, so that would be fine.
All right, Fab, thank you so much. I'm so appreciative of that. I'm sure everybody else is who's listening to this, and really best of luck with, you know, your future career. I've known you now for about 10 years. We were just talking about that, and you know, you continue to sort of do all these things in your business, and also I know you're very busy with your family, and you know, you're playing rugby and cricket and all of that still, and traveling all around the globe. So.
Well, I stopped playing rugby a few years ago.
Oh, did you? Yeah, well, yeah, yeah, you know, yeah. You're still very sporty and active. And so I think what it goes to show is that you can do so much in your career. And I know you've got lots more to do in the future. So this is really an exciting sector for people to get involved in. And thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast and found it useful, you can get more of the same, no matter where you are in your career. If you're looking for your first job, there's my book, How to Get Your First Job and Build the Career You Want, available on Amazon. Or if you prefer face-to-face, my company Middleton Murray provides courses to prep you for your new career and then place you into a job. Alternatively, if you prefer online, try my online program, Your Body Means Business, which is more holistic and provides a complete blueprint on how to advance your career, whether you're employed or running your own business, by upgrading your physical and mental fitness and following a complete business blueprint guaranteed for success. That program, I think, is my best yet. So in summary, no matter where you are in your career, starting out, starting again, or just wanting more, we can help. Follow me on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest, where I post daily at Angela Middleton. And subscribe to this channel, as well as my Limitless vlog on YouTube, where you'll see weekly vlogs full of hints and tips for enhanced careers performance. And share this with your friends as well, if you think it will help them. Thanks so much for listening.